This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
You can spend your time alone, redigesting past regrets. Oh. Or you can come to terms and realize you're the only one who cannot forgive.
Is it a great song, Waddle? But what
is this,
a new great
Pearl Jam?
What a great montage song!
I like Pearl Jam. I'm not like dialed in the way that Danny Zetterman and others are. Is this a new song that is more recent for them?
When did this come out? And Jason loves the music. I thought it was.
Boy, he hit a home run with the music.
It was fantastic. Like the ending of it was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
And a great montage song, too.
So Present Tense was released in 96, guys.
Okay,
yeah,
so it's
that's
long.
Very, very, very
okay, long ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's good. It's not, is it one of the, I mean, if you're a diehard Pearl Jam fan, it's very recognizable. But for the average Pearl Jam fan, probably not one that you're aware of quite often, correct?
Let's ask Jason how he chose this. Jason Hare joins us right now. All of our Last Dance coverage is brought to you by Coors Light. And thank you to Jason for joining us each and every Monday after the Last Dance airs. And he promised us that he'll take some phone calls. So if you have a question for Jason, 312-332-3776. Jason, congratulations on everything. How did you come up with that song that we were just discussing in that final one of the last scenes of The Last Dance?
I vividly remember the first time I heard that song. I was studying abroad in 1996, and we were hanging out in a dorm in Galway, Ireland, and one of my friends picked up that album because he was a massive Pearl Jam fan. I, of course, knew who they were, but I wasn't like as much of a fanatic as he was, and we were actually going to see them on tour. It was their first date of their European tour was at this place called Mill Street in Ireland, and we were just listening to their new album. And that song has always stuck with me as this epic song. And even back then, I wanted to get into this business. I was thinking in my head of like what these songs would look like, or what these montages, if I got the chance one day, would look like. And I always had that song in my back pocket. So at the outset of this project, I always knew that was going to be the end song.
Wow. Did you also have like the final scenes played out in your mind before all of this actually came together?
Not exactly. I mean, I knew that we were going to start in the mansion and end in the mansion, where Michael's looking out at the ocean. And I knew that I wanted to use that clip of him saying that he just wanted to be respected like the Lakers and the Celtics and the Sixers at the beginning and the end, to kind of juxtapose the young, innocent Michael with this kind of martial artist of a basketball player, this master he had become. But everything else just kind of happens organically. What really hammered it home for me was when we interviewed Mark Vansell, and he was saying that of all of Michael's gifts, his mindfulness and his presentness and his ability to not think in the past or the future, that's what his biggest gift is. I knew I wanted to save that for the later episodes, and if we could, the final one. And then when we saw the footage of him hitting that shot when they're having that long-distance shooting contest, and he drains that shot and is dancing around with his headphones on to that Kenny Lattimore song as if it's a preseason game, and he's going into game one of his final NBA finals. I just thought, this guy is like a different animal. He lives in the present tense all the time. Like the music and the lyrics made perfect sense, so everything kind of lined up for us.
Jason Hare joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. A couple of compliments that I have for you. I think it's amazing from a director's point of view that you came up with an ending. You found a way in the ending to end it with stuff that we didn't know about. Like, we all know how this ends. And us in Chicago, we know most of the stories, too. But for me, as a guy who is a fan of the Bulls with season tickets, and then I covered the last three championships. One, I didn't know how Michael would react to Jerry Reinsdorf saying what he said. You gave him the iPad, and then he opened up about number seven. And I thought that was breaking new ground. Two, like the story that you got, and I would love to know how it came up, about that final meeting from someone who covered that team. I don't know how many of us knew about that, and I know most of my friends did not know about that story, so congrats on all that.
Well, that thank you for that, and that's a testament to my team as well. I mean, all of us studied this team. I was researching for 2 years before we even sat down to interview. The first person we interviewed was Brian McCarthy, and we interviewed him because we wanted to interview people early on who knew everything there was to know about all these eras, because we needed to give our editors some stuff to work with. And Brian worked in PR for the Bulls when there were seven people on the entire Bulls staff. And then Brian went to the NBA to work as the PR director for the NBA under David Stern. And he was by Michael's side at all these events all the way through 98. So when we started out on this project, we wanted to uncover as many stories as possible. And so we did 2 years of research before we ever even asked one question and rolled camera once. So that it came from, it's in a few of the books that I read. And if I showed you the stack of books, it's well above my waist, the amount of pages of research that went into this thing. But it always just seemed so poetic, and it's so indicative of the methods that Phil would use to motivate these guys and inspire these guys. Phil really is kind of a transcendent personality. And that goes back to the present tense thing too, is that Phil was the one preaching this mantra of, you know, Zen and mindfulness and, you know, doing meditation and yoga with the team. All of that is about staying in the moment and being in the present tense. Michael even says it when he's at the piano in the hotel room afterwards and someone says, what are you going to do about next year? He says, just enjoy now. Just enjoy this. We'll figure out October. We'll figure out next year in October. Just enjoy this moment right now. So all of that really is just a product of researching as much as you can, giving yourself as much creative ammunition as you can, and then deciding where to take your shots.
Jason, as Sylvie mentioned, it was a moving scene to have Michael watch the iPad and the comments of Jerry Reinsdorf. Were there other moments when you interviewed him where he was visually upset with Jerry's decisions? Because, like, we've had this conversation now for 5 weeks. You can blame Jerry Krause all you want, but ultimately, the owner can have final say. How much, I don't know if the right word is anger, but how much was brewing inside of Michael with regard to Jerry Reinsdorf not stepping in and stopping some of this commotion that ended up with them disbanding?
I don't know who he holds responsible, if it's one person or if it's a lot of people or if he takes any of the blame himself, although I doubt it. But I'm not sure exactly what he thinks. I think it's pretty telling. If you go back to that press conference after the 97 finals, and we showed it in the first episode, but he's still drenched in sweat from winning the title over the Jazz in 97, and people are already asking him, what's it going to take to come back next year? That's what a cloud was hanging over this team in the summer going into this final season. And this is easily findable on YouTube, but he says, when I came to Chicago, the team was worth what, like $15 million? And now they're worth anywhere from, I forget what the number was then, but it would dwarf it today. But, you know, the value of the team had increased exponentially. And he says, I don't know what Jerry Reinsdorf is going to have to do. Maybe he's going to have to mortgage his house. Some people are laughing. But he said, we deserve to keep on winning until we can't anymore. I think that's what he was adamant about. And I think that he feels robbed, that he was robbed of that opportunity to at least prove, like he said in the locker room after game six in 98, they can't win until we quit. And they didn't exactly quit because it was kind of involuntary, but it's a question for him to ask him who he holds most accountable. But I know that money seems to be the root of all the problems here, money and ego.
See, people today, Jason, are arguing, oh, well, this makes the Bulls dynasty even more special because they went out on top. I view it more as like a sports, I wouldn't even call it a sports tragedy in that context, because I don't know if it, I would have loved to just seen them try. And if they lost, they lost. And maybe it was a way to keep Michael from ever playing with Washington and only with one team and having a better connection with him in the future. But do you view it through – which lens do you view it through?
Well, it's poetic the way that they went out. You can't have a better ending than that. And I don't know that it could have even ever been – more perfect, because there would have always been some sort of asterisk that next season, because it was only a 50-game season. But I think that unless they brought Dennis back along with everybody else, it would have been very difficult to get past, you know, a San Antonio team with Tim Duncan and David Robinson. That would have been very tough for them to match up against. Now, you look in the East, though, and the 8 seed in the Knicks made it to the finals that year. So all hell had broken loose with this contracted season. As a filmmaker telling the story of this team, I certainly think that it ended the right way. But, man, I'm so curious. I wish we had some sort of crystal ball and we could see how that would have played out, because they were on their last legs there in the end of 98. And I think that any kind of drama that had occurred in 97, 98 would have only been compounded the next year, unless all those guys got paid, which was basically impossible. Scottie Pippen got a $67.2 million deal with Houston a few months after that season ended. So guys were waiting to cash out.
Jason, I've always asked Silvy this, because as he said, he covered the team for the final three-peat, and he was around the team all the time from an even further distance away. It never felt like Michael was really close with any of his teammates. And I've hypothesized that he did that intentionally so he could ride them as hard as he did to get the most out of them. Why do you think that after sitting with Michael and doing all the research that maybe he wasn't as close to some of his teammates as other guys were?
I think that there's a couple of parts to that answer. One is that it was very hard for him to be that close to any guys, because you're spending half your life on the road when you're a pro athlete. And especially as a basketball player, you're playing, you know, week in and week out, day after day. When he goes on the road, he cannot hang out with his teammates. He can't. He can't leave the facility. That's how famous he was back then, that they would have to – his security guards, who have become celebrities in their own right, which is fantastic because they deserve it, and they're no longer with us, but Gus and CT and John Michael Wozniak and those guys, they would have to call the local police in advance if he wanted to go to, say, a restaurant. And they would have to arrange for the police to give him the space to get in and out of that restaurant. It wasn't like he could just meet, you know, Scotty and Tony in the lobby and walk around and find a place to get a steak. Those guys, even as famous as they were, they could do that. I think Scotty had a bodyguard who traveled with him, and Dennis had a guy who traveled with him. But they could still come and go as they pleased. They were going to get stopped for autographs and all that. Michael comes into a restaurant, the restaurant stops. I mean, the chef stops cooking and comes out to get a glimpse of Michael Jordan. It wasn't like any other athlete of his time. So he couldn't spend time with guys on the road, and that's when a lot of the bonding happens. I also think that when they're at home, it's deceptive. We didn't have any video of this, and I wish that we did. They had a thing, you guys probably know about this, in Chicago called the Breakfast Club. And Scottie Pippen and Ron Harper would come to Michael's house every day to work out with Tim Grover during that second three-peat run. Scottie and Michael got a lot tighter after his baseball stint when he came back than they were before. They were basically, it was like big brother, little brother when he came back from baseball. And Ron Harper and Scottie worked out every morning, and Michael's chef would make them breakfast at Michael's house, and then they would go to practice. He's still very close with Tony Kukoc these days, I know. Scott Burrell, he golfs with every summer. He's still, I mean, despite what the doc might lead you to believe, he loves Scottie Burrell, and the love is mutual, and they still hang out whenever they can. So I do think that there's a lot of friendships there. Like, listen, we didn't know about this relationship with Kobe and Michael until long after Kobe passed away, or not long after, but at least after Kobe passed away. So who's to say that he's not tight with a lot of these guys? I think a lot of these guys would rather do things out of the public eye, and certainly Michael's going to appreciate if you don't publicize your friendship with him, because he values that privacy so much.
Director Jason Hare joining us. Your turn for questions, 312-332-3776. We've been very fortunate to talk to Jason each and every Monday. He chose to spend two segments with us. We'll take your questions for Jason coming up next.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Conversation with Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, continues. Your chance, 332-3776. Before we go to the phones, Jason, I have a follow-up, and so does Waddle. Then we'll take the calls. I asked you this at the beginning, but now that you watched it happen in real time with all 10 episodes, do you believe, based on where we were at a time in history that we'll always look back on with a pandemic and with the world basically stopping, that your documentary happened at the perfect time?
I certainly wouldn't phrase it like that. I don't like to phrase the timing of this in any positive way. I know that my team and I are really proud that we could provide some escape. I love the fact that people were looking forward to Sundays. It was helping people get through the week. It was connecting people with families the way that sports do. We were breaking it down and devouring it the way we break sports down. So all of those things that I'm really happy about, just that it could help people at a terrible time. But to say that it's a perfect time, no, nothing will. You never say anything is perfect timing in this kind of environment. I am incredibly lucky, and I bet you guys are too, that you've stayed healthy throughout this. But I know too many people who have been affected by it in terrible ways to phrase it like that. But I am really proud that we got this thing done and that we could help people to escape, like I said, just for a little bit during this time.
As usual, my question isn't as deep or important, but I did want to know, of all your favorite video that you were unable to unearth, where does the Bird-Jordan exchange after the Eastern Conference Finals rank in terms of your favorites?
Right at if it's not the top, it's damn near close, because that awesome. Was something that we watched that a few times and didn't notice that exchange. I think it was an editor of mine who noticed what he said. I forget exactly how we discovered that, but it was like, wait a second,
what fighting words in a lot of different, you know, places.
Well, but it's the ultimate words of respect. I mean, right. You're not going to say that in Larry Bird's ear unless you right. know that you have his respect, and it's going to be taken as kind of a FU2 kind of thing between right. two guys who have been in so many battles together. I love the little story arc, especially as a Bostonian, that Larry had in this thing from 86, Michael dropping 63 on them, and then coaching Michael in episode 5 in the All-Star game, and finally playing him in episode 9 with that great Pacers team. So that was, yeah, it's among the top things that to stumble upon and say, wow, I can't wait for people to see this.
Mark is in Los Angeles. Mark, you're on with Jason Hare. What's your question?
Hey guys, Jason, thank you so much. You know, I'm not here, but my family's all back in Chicago, and it's just been great every week, like you were just saying, to be able to catch up with them. My question is, the city of Chicago, which I love, did you ever think of that as a character? You know, did it shape Michael? There's so much there in terms of how the city itself, I think, changed over the decade. Did that ever enter your thought process?
It definitely did. Because when we first set out on this thing, 10 hours to me sounded so daunting. I really felt like we were going to have to get into deep stories about, you know, the history of the dunk contest and things like that. Like, how can we possibly fill this up? And having told the story about the 85 Chicago Bears, I knew how much the city appreciated them and the reasons why they appreciated that team so much. I think that there's a lot of parallels there with why the city appreciated Michael so much. That city was hungry for a winner, and they had their reputation. There was a bite that we lost at the end just for time of episode 10 of Jerry Reinsdorf saying that before the Bulls and Michael Jordan, when you went around the globe, people would say rat-a-tat-tat Al Capone. That's what they knew Chicago for. And, yeah. You know, the reputation of the city changed globally because of Michael's efforts. And Michael was very much kind of a hard hat, lunch pail, blue collar, work your tail off, nothing is given, take no shortcuts kind of worker. And that's kind of, that embodies the spirit of Chicago. And Michael has always considered himself kind of an underdog. And I know, being a Bostonian, that we have that chip on our shoulder as well, that you guys are the second city. Well, he made it into something way better than the second city by the time he left. So, you know, as always, when people say, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that, it sounds ridiculous to say 10 hours wasn't enough, but we just had so much story to get to. And when you saw Steve Kerr's story last night, that's not something that I even thought that we would have time to tell, but I'm so glad that we did, because that might be my favorite backstory that we did of anybody. But there was just so, these characters were so rich, and there was so much there to mine with these guys that some things fell on the floor.
Meller, if we can go to Z in Berwyn. Z, you're on with Jason Hare. What's your question?
Jason, what's up, man? First off, I just wanted to say great job on The Last Dance, man. Just don't listen to the critics, man. I think it was perfect. It was the best thing at the best time. And you know, that being said, you spoiled me, man, and I want more. And I know you said earlier that there, you know, we're not going to talk about anything past 10. But besides Last Dance, what's next, man? Who's the next player that I can get excited for that I can see Jason directing?
Thank you for the words. I appreciate it. I don't know, because, you know, hopefully we'll be long out of this situation by the time we're ready to start rolling cameras and start telling somebody else's story. But I will say this, it's going to be tough to match just, you know, the gravitas that the 90s Bulls bring to any story, and that Michael Jordan brings. This is the indelible franchise of my time. You know, I've told you guys before about when I think of any part of my childhood, Michael was part of that as a fan. But Michael's poster was hanging on my wall through my entire childhood, no matter what phase it was. So when I was back there chasing Tom Waddle around for his autograph outside of Alumni Stadium when he was coming down from Roberts Center for practice, I was still admiring Michael Jordan back then. So he was such an indelible part of my youth and my sports fandom, and my music fandom and pop cultural fandom grew in parallel with his pop cultural significance and his reign atop the NBA. So it's going to be tough to find anything else that matches the grandeur of that project. But I think with a few naps and a little bit of boredom, I'll start reading a few books and figure something out.
Andre's in Tinley Park. Meller, if we can get Andre in Tinley, you're on ESPN 1000 with Jason Hare. What's your question, Andre?
Thank you, Jason, for providing such a wonderful documentary on Michael Jordan. If I had a chance to vote for Academy Awards and everything, I would definitely vote for you. My question is, with all the Bulls championships, I understand the key players were there, but there was a bunch of role players. For instance, Rodney McRae, Darrell Walker, Trent Tucker, and to go on and go on. I would have loved to see some of their footage and their stories that helped the Bulls win 6 championships. That is my question. You guys be safe and have a great day.
Thanks for the words, Andre. I appreciate it. I wish you did vote in the Academy Awards. I don't know if we're eligible for that, but I appreciate that. Yeah, the challenge of this thing was we had to straddle the line between this being a doc about the 97-98 Bulls, which is where, you know, that main highway we were on. I like to tell our editors that's the highway, because that's where the footage is, and this unseen footage, and The Last Dance is the story of that last season. It's the title of that last season that Phil gave them, obviously. The exit ramps that we go off of are when we tell the stories of, you know, the late 80s Bulls before they won the title, and the arrivals of course, Michael and Scotty and Horace Grant and the trade of Oakley for Cartwright. That we had to just show the big building blocks of what made those early titles, what made that happen. So we didn't have a lot of time to spend on some of the role players that you mentioned. I have a ton of respect for McRae and Darrell Walker and Trent Tucker, just as I have respect for guys like Ron Harper and Luke Longley, who were on that 98 team, who we didn't get to really profile that much. But we had, you know, as I said before, I sound like a broken record, but 10 hours was just not enough time for us to dive into all the stories we wanted to dive into. So I do appreciate that the hardcore Bulls fans would like to see people like that, but at the same time, you have to understand that we're also making a documentary for the 20-year-old kid who lives in suburban Paris, who's never heard of anyone besides Michael Jordan when you mention the Bulls, and he wants to see the stories of Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson and all of those. So we had a lot of audiences to answer to, and we did our best.
It's a great point. Frank's in Noble Square. Frank, you're on with Jason Hare. What's your question?
Hey, Jason, thank you so much for this doc, man. By leaving the last season with the winning of each of the first five championships was just brilliant storytelling. My question is, you know, that end with Jordan saying that, you know, if you would have gotten, you know, maybe Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson or even Steve Kerr in a room and everybody to talk about, you know, maybe going one more year, was that video ever shown to Scottie or Phil or Steve? And just curious what their reactions were, if they were. If not, that's fine. But just curious if they ever got to see that, him say that, and what he said to you. Thank you so much, man. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. I appreciate the words. It was not shown, and part of the reason is because that interview with Michael took place in December of last year. We interviewed Phil in August of 2018, Scottie in August of 2018, Steve Kerr was sometime in the fall of 18. So we did a lot of these interviews a very long time ago, and we interviewed these guys for hours on end because we had to get to so many storylines. But, you know, they're doing this out of the kindness of their heart, so we couldn't keep calling them and saying, hey, sit back down with us for a film crew. Michael was contracted to do multiple interviews, so that's why we got him, and we spaced his interviews out from June 2018 to May 2019, December 2019. But we would have no way of showing anyone what Michael said in December of 2019 because we had so few interviews after that.
Jason, I can't tell you what a treat this has been for us. So, Waddle, I know you feel the same way, don't you?
Absolutely. I do. And one last question for you because, you know, there were so many great moments, and we're going to actually go through that over the course of this week about what resonated most with us. But what resonated most with you? Was there one moment over the course of this entire project, Jason, where kind of hit you or your favorite moment, maybe one that we would all agree upon or maybe something that we would have never expected you to say that was my favorite moment of this project?
The moments, when I think of moments, I think of behind the scenes moments of us, you know, breaking this thing out and figuring out how to tell this story. So the moments that made it onto the screen, I mean, it seems like an obvious answer, but I don't think that I will ever forget the moment that Michael got emotional when he was describing, you know, what his philosophy was about being a teammate and about winning and about greatness and about being unapologetic about what it takes to get there. I mean, that was riveting to sit there and witness that. And it was so unexpected. So I think that it was just jarring for me because it was so soon into that first episode. I will, you know, when I look at that shot of him looking out the mansion, I'll never forget that because that's the first thing we shot with him. Wow. And I remember he's got a smirk on his face in the very last shot when he's walking out of the frame before we go to the credits. He's got a smirk on his face. And it's because I was behind the camera saying, okay, now lift your head. Take the cigar, take a puff of the cigar. I'm just directing him from behind the camera. And he kept on telling me, I'm only going to do it once. I'll do it once, but that's it. And he was immediately kind of busted my chops. And that was the first time that I had met him, but I had never worked with him. So that's the first time that he was in front of the camera and I was giving him direction from off camera. And I said, okay, we're done with everything now. I just need you to stand up and slowly turn to your right and walk towards the front door of the house. And he said, are you sure? Because I'm only doing it once. I said, you can go ahead. So we were kind of laughing off camera. That's why he's got that little smirk on his face.
Awesome.
And I think that Ahmad was off camera giving him a little bit of crap about that long, skinny cigar. He kept on saying, do you want a real cigar? Are you sure you don't want a real cigar? You still want to have that big cigarette in your hand? So he was in a good mood from the get-go. And when I see the look on his face in those, it takes me right back to that moment.
Jason, again, yeah, thank you fantastic. For everything. Thank you for the documentary. Thank you for all your time for our questions, our listener questions, being as patient as you are. We've really enjoyed the friendship, so thank you.
And congratulations on a fantastic project.
Always, guys. I can't wait to have a beer in person next time I'm in town. When I'm shooting that Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg documentary next fall.
Oh, you're breaking news. Yeah.
No. But seriously, guys, I appreciate the opportunity, and it's such a full circle cool thing for me, being an admirer of Tom's when I was a kid, to now be friends with you guys.
This is fantastic.
Thank you so much, Jason.
It means a lot to us.
There you go. Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance. How about that? And some of the great calls.
Very cool.
Yeah, let's take a couple-minute timeout. We've got Waddle's World coming up, and more of your phone calls. We went guest-free today, other than Jason, because we wanted to talk to you today. And also, we will play Waddle some of the highlights from the Matt Nagy interview, getting yes. to react to that coming up at 4. But Waddle's World is up next.
It's that time again when we venture deep into the great unknown.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
A trip inside the mind of a multi-concussed former Bears wide receiver.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him, and he had an all-time day in the use of smelling salt.
Buckle up, boys and girls.
Tom Waddle, everything wants to have a Tom Waddle. If I had a football team, I'd like to have a Tom Waddle on my team because you draw from that.
It's time to go inside Waddle's World.
Tom Waddle did have to use a lot of smelling salt.
Oh, thank you, John. Waddle's World brought to you by the great people at Wintrust Community Banks. They're Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit Wintrust.com/findus. Member FDIC. It says here that New York, Texas, and California are all going to allow a return of pro sports without fans. Governors from all three states announced that professional sports could resume in their respective states in the near future. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is encouraging major sports teams in New York to plan on reopening without fans. Governor Gavin Newsom said sports could resume without fans in California as soon as the first week or so of June. And Governor Greg Abbott of Texas also says pro sports without fans could resume in Texas at the end of May. That's all good news.
Like a lot of these states, like you're like, okay, well, they're a little more liberal the way they operate. But does it surprise you that New York, the state that was so heavily hit, the city that was so heavily hit, that they're open to all this? I mean, does that make you feel really good?
It makes me encouraged. Now, listen, all of these, all of these plans are going to have protocol in place for when there is a bump in the road. You know, there will be hiccups. Yeah. There's no question. I mean, there will be positive tests and how
there will be hiccups.
Yes, there will. The way that they go about handling those situations will, say a lot about how things eventually will go in the future. So I'm just glad. Listen, from the very beginning, we're all in as they say, an uncharted water. And I just was against anybody just telling you, hey, for the remainder of the calendar 2020, we're not doing anything. Look, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But I just don't know how you could project that far out as we're learning things day after day after day. And it just feels to me like there's a sense of, more willingness to be flexible with things. And yes, we will let the science and the medical professionals lead the way. But in the process, we're going to have those people work with the sports people to try to get things back on track. And the other thing I said to all of you guys from the very beginning, and I didn't mean to be callous, and I'm not trying to overlook the more important issues. Sports is what, $100 billion business we found out in the United States? Now, follow the green, which I think has been kind of a motto of this show. Because we're sports guys, we don't farm, although you could follow the green as you're farming as well, because
sure.
crops are green. But follow what I'm saying? So there is enormous incentive financially to try to get back to a sense of normalcy that transcends just doing something so that people will have something to look forward to on a day in and day out basis. There is a real life financial incentive to get back to work. And I think that, I think we're seeing that in play. And I don't say that as a negative, okay? That's just reality.
So we're hearing all about it now. It's all about the finances. And unfortunately, the finances could tear a lot of things apart. And it's something
true.
To have a conversation with later as well.
Yes, absolutely. Mellor, were you watching Bundesliga yesterday?
I watched yesterday and Saturday morning, Tom.
Is Abdallah actually dialed into the television watching Bundesliga as we speak?
The game is over, and it was not on our television, but I will have you know.
Was it profitable?
It was definitely profitable.
Cha-ching!
Leverkusen and Bremen combined for five goals, which hit the over.
I tweeted out on Saturday, all of you people that have been making fun of me for watching Rogue Soccer and betting on Rogue Soccer, now you are like me.
Yeah.
We are one in the same
right.
now.
You
and
led the way.
And I embrace you and I welcome you with open arms from 6 feet away, social distancing.
Abdallah was a trailblazer.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a Portland trailblazer.
No. Way to go, Adam. English Premier League is allowing teams to resume small group training. EPL teams have agreed on measures that will allow non-contact training sessions to resume tomorrow. Protocols allow for up to five players working together on the field. Listen, I believe the NBA, as we continue to the week rolls on, you'll see more and more teams open up their facility, right? And I believe, did I not also see that that the NFL is in the process of working on reopening dates as well? But I know they're in phase two of their off-season, whatever it is that they're being allowed to do.
Yeah.
But I think that they're now, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think they're putting rules in place, right? So that...
Yeah, the NFL, like the word was that they're trying to figure out when coaches and staffs can come back to the facilities.
And you're not going to let, like, Nagy's not allowed in his facility until all the coaches are allowed in. So you don't get
that competitive advantage. Word is that every facility across the NFL will need to be allowed to be open by the state before they say, okay, coaches can head back. Because, like you said, they don't want an unfair advantage.
So you can't have California open for the Rams and the Chargers to go, you know, and the 49ers to go back to business, and there still be a, you know, a
right.
The Bears,
I think, would be one of the last ones because of the you know, we're behind everything in the five-stage plan. But
speaking of the Bears as well, I know we're going to talk about the Bears in depth at the top of the hour, but we learned this weekend that Michael McCaskey passed, I believe, at the age of 76. And I personally send my condolences to the entire McCaskey family. Mike was in charge of the team when I was there for the 6 years. I was blessed and fortunate enough to play for them. He was always a very pleasant man. He was always very involved with great different organizations and initiatives, and was always looking to make life better for those that were struggling with adversity and raising money for great causes. So, you know, I was privileged to have played for the organization when Mike was there. And as I said, all of my interactions with him were fantastic. And my condolences to the entire McCaskey family.
He was Virginia's oldest son.
Yes.
Lovey Smith also tweeted out a good story about, you know, 5 years before he was hired by the Bears. He sat at a table in an initiative. There was an initiative on minority coaches and how they can get involved in the NFL. And Lovey sat at the same table as Michael McCaskey. Michael McCaskey had a very good conversation with him, prompted Lovey to write a thank you note to him. And then 5 years later, Michael McCaskey and Ted Phillips hired Lovey Smith. Michael McCaskey still had the note from 5 years ago and remembered the conversation. Yeah.
He was a good man. He really was. And as I said, my interactions with Michael and his family were all fantastic. So, again, I send my condolences, and I think we all do, to the entire McCaskey family. Frank Reich is expecting Philip Rivers to play beyond 2020. How about that?
Wow,
Rivers
that's
signed
news.
A 1 year deal with the Colts, but Reich says he expects a 38-year-old to continue playing beyond this upcoming season. Bartolo Colon is 46, and he still hopes to pitch in the majors. How about that? Says, if I had the opportunity, I would play in any league, go anywhere. He told ESPN's Marley Rivera, if any major league team wants an old man, I'm available. I concur. If there's any major league baseball team out there that wants me, I will sign a contract and I will go play for them as well.
Oh, you would?
Yeah, of course.
I know the Reds have been thinking about it.
Even if you have to wear your uniform to the game?
Yes.
And you can't shower
that
afterwards?
That is wild. You know what?
I missed
that conversation being in Tennessee. I was off the grid.
We didn't have it because the details came down. We were just kind of joking about that being a possibility before we actually had the rules that the owners have proposed to the players that leaked out on Saturday.
Hi, hashtag shower at home.
No spitting.
I don't think that's big of a deal.
No spitting. Hey, when we come back, South Korean football teams are having to apologize for something that they did not do that you'll get a giggle out of. How about that?
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
Before the break, when I said football, you know what I mean. I mean football. South Korean football team apologizes for using sex dolls to fill the stands. K-League club FC Seoul says the dolls used to make stadiums look less empty had been ordered inadvertently after a misunderstanding. How do you order sex dolls in a misunderstanding? How is
you get them confused with a mannequin. I mean... Well, I could see it happening.
So you're right. Okay. Is this Mr. Smith? Yes. I'm looking for mannequins to fill our stadium to make it look more full.
Well,
Mr. Smith, I'm looking for sex dolls to fill the seats at our stadium for our soccer game.
So we accidentally sent 30 mannequins to someone's house, and you got 30 sex dolls. I don't see a problem here, sir. We don't need to fix anything.
With you on that front. If you want it on a personal level, yes. But in terms of a professional level, I don't know how you mess that up.
Well, just put some clothes on over them. I mean, it's not like they're being used.
Okay, let's play a guessing game. Listen, I don't know.
You don't know that.
I don't know that either. Yeah, hey, where's Donnie? He was our sub. We were preparing to play him 15 minutes in the second half.
Please practice proper social distancing when you find yourself in public.
Donnie's near in the stands. What is Donnie doing? Okay, we're going to play a guessing game. You ready?
All right, good.
Raging house party amid coronavirus ends when man blanks. Raging house party amid coronavirus ends when man
sneezes.
Coughs. I was going cough.
Oh, you guys are going way low on the poor behavior meter.
Oh, it's so poops.
I just love the fact that 13 years in, that one of the first words that comes to mind in a Waddle's World story is poops.
Poops.
Yeah, well, this
raging
is
raging house party.
Goes pants to mouth.
Okay, you need to show yourself out. You know where the door is. You show yourself out.
Use
mister.
It now.
Raging. By the way, I see Mason has been a part of all of the promo videos, so he's stopped doing whatever it was that
yes,
got him canned.
It was a one-day thing. Thank
okay,
goodness.
Good. Good. Raging house party amid coronavirus ends when man shoots himself in the groin.
Oh, wow.
Large gatherings still prohibited under strict coronavirus stay-at-home orders, but that didn't stop a raging house party Saturday night in the Hollywood Hills that ended when police say a man accidentally shot himself in the wing ding. That's not what it says here, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When they responded, they found that more than 100 people were gathered at a short-term rental property that appeared to have been reserved for the occasion.
Wow.
Pretty interesting, huh? I saw Sylvie sent this one to me. Detroit, you have to see the picture of this to get the full gist of the story.
It made big news yesterday.
Detroit priest sprays holy water from a squirt gun to maintain social distancing. A Roman Catholic priest in the Detroit area has taken aim at his parishioners in a bid to maintain social distancing during the coronavirus pandemic, using a squirt gun to shoot the holy water. You've got to see the pictures. They are.
I think that's fantastic creativity,
yeah,
isn't it?
I agree with you. Yeah.
Social distancing, holy water. Here it is. I've got a squirt gun.
No easy way to segue from there to here, but naked man spotted sitting on a roof after cops entered his home in a drug raid. We go to England.
That's not a bad idea to go to the roof. Would they know?
Yeah, I'm with you. The roof, unless the roof's on fire.
Yes. Then we don't need no water.
Oh, yeah. So we just burn that. Yeah. A naked man climbed through a house's skylight during a drug raid. He was still clutching cannabis as he scrambled onto the roof. Why is he naked is what you're asking. I don't have the answers.
When people get high, they get
naked.
Abdallah tells you that all the time.
Have you told me that?
Naked right now.
So that means you're high.
Yes.
And Meller is tremendously uncomfortable.
No, he sits behind me. I just don't look.
Oh, you don't want him behind you when he's naked? What's wrong with you?
I mean, I'm
You're asking for trouble.
Well, and if you're watching us on Twitch, twitch.tv.
What are you implying? He's Antonio Brown or something?
Yeah. Twitch.tv/ESPN1000 Chicago to see me fully clothed.
No, Meller, what I meant was I would believe you would want to have anybody that is naked around you within, like, you can see them. You don't want somebody who's naked for odd reasons to be out of your peripheral vision. That's all I'm saying. People stuck in haunted homes during quarantine report.
Life advice I'll take from you.
I mean, seriously.
That's
like,
fair.
Tell me
that's
I'm
fair.
Wrong.
No,
if you're in a tight...
I have to admit...
I'm awkward, like, having a conversation with another naked person. It's... Like, in the health club, I told you this.
Another naked person? That implies that you are also naked.
No, I meant, like... how could I phrase it? You're right, the way I said it, but... I meant like
any naked person.
A naked person, like you're in the health club, and the guy's just standing there. His towel's over his shoulder, yet he's got nothing down below, and he's just, you know, he's in a really comfortable position and just talking to you. And
it's like he's about to put his hand in the ground and run 48 pull as we play a running play, right? Like he's an offensive tackle.
Not if it's Matt Nagy, he's throwing that ball.
That's true, and we'll get to that a little bit later. People stuck in haunted homes during the quarantine report a rise in spooky happenings. You buying that?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're home more around the ghosts. So
you
the,
think
ghosts
the ghosts
are going to bother
more?
You more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to play a game?
Yep.
Do you want to play a game of Dollar? Put your clothes
sweeping
on.
The nation.
Yep.
Public drunkenness. Exotic animals. Dumb criminals. Random stabbings. Or maybe just some good old-fashioned debauchery. Everything's on the table. It's the Sunshine State versus the Buckeye State as we play Florida or Ohio. And as always, listeners, feel free to play along at home.
I would like to also tell you that this hour is brought to you by Chicagoland Acura Dealers. Visit any of the 11 Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Acura Dealers today and test drive the 2020 RDX. Learn more at ChicagoAcuraDealers.com. Man dives into Bass Pro fish tank.
Oh,
a man was caught on camera jumping into the Bass Pro shop's fish tank. Have you guys been to the Bass Pro up in Gurnee?
I have not, but I know where it's at.
Man, big
those
fish tank.
Things are, they're huge. It's like a whole village.
Yeah, it's a whole village of fish. A village.
It's
unclear who the swimmer is. Witnesses said the incident happened on Sunday. A statement from Bass Pro Shops read, the incident is illegal, dangerous, and highly discouraged. We work with law enforcement.
Was he fishing with, what was his bait? Was he using a worm? Was he using a night crawler? What was he using?
He's using his own bait. All individuals who personally attempt or are involved in such activities will be arrested, and the police department is looking for him.
You think you get arrested by diving in the giant fish tank at the your local
I don't think they're open in Ohio. I think this is Florida. We're open for everything. Let's have a grand opening for the new Bass Pro Shop.
You
so
know
let's
what?
That's Florida.
Okay, you know what? You've convinced me. I'm going to go with Tampa.
Bass Pro's open in Ohio.
I was going to just say that. I think they are.
I just googled it.
They've for a week or so they've been
10,000 Bass Pro Boulevard in Rossford, Ohio. Come on down!
Oh wow!
Actually, no. This happened in Florida. I was just letting you know.
Oh,
that's
good.
What I'm talking about.
I was just letting you know that there are Bass Pros open in Florida. Like stuff is open.
Winner.
How are you going to go camping if you can't go get your gear?
You got to right.
You know what? You have to have gotten your gear before the virus came to town.
Mm-mm. Wow. All right, so Matt Nagy was very open and honest, Waddle. I want to know if you're buying it. That's coming up in 2 short minutes.